In a segment on Fox News recently, Vice President J.D. Vance laid out what he called a very Christian concept. Quote, "To love your family and then love your neighbor and then love your community and then love your fellow citizens in your own country, and then after that, you can focus on and prioritize the rest of the world." A lot of the far left has completely inverted this. When challenged about this statement on X and how that was a Christian concept, he quoted a statement from St. Augustine, an early church theologian. Now, that interpretation of that Augustine comment has been refuted by many, including Pope Francis, in response to his words. But nonetheless, it is an example of a particular idea, a particular bias, if you will. And really, you don't have to go to the Pope to get a refutation of that. I mean, you just have to read this story that began the reading that Amanda shared with us about the Good Samaritan to sort of hear how Jesus' words can collide with an idea, even one expressed many years ago, at least in part, maybe not exactly as it's interpreted now, but expressed in part by a church father and also by a current political leader. When Jesus told parables, he often told parables that had a line in them that made everybody sort of gasp. And because stories like the Good Samaritan are so familiar to us, we don't get that sense of collision. But just before this story, those of you who were at the Ash Wednesday service heard a reading from Luke that happens at the end of chapter 9, in which Jesus has set his face to go to Jerusalem, and they go to they're traveling there, and they go to Samaria, home of Samaritans, and because they're going to Jerusalem, and there's this dispute about the temple and that sort of thing, that's this religious argument that's going on, they don't want Jesus to stay with them. And as a response, James and John, like beloved disciples, say, "Hey, shall we call down fire on them?" And Jesus speaks sternly to them and just says, "No, let's just go a different way." And it is shortly after that story that this parable is told in the book of Luke. It's become such a famous parable for us. I mean, I almost don't really need to say much more about it. It sort of preaches itself. It invites us to consider being a neighbor and what that might look like and who that might include. But it's interesting not only to think about how this parable still collides today for us, but how the use of a Samaritan, this really despised other of the people who would have been hearing this the first time, would have really hit like a collision when Jesus names him in the story as kind of the good guy, right? So it's interesting not only to think about that, but then to think where Luke goes after that. We don't usually read these two stories together, the story about neighbors followed by a story about siblings. And one might ask what in fact they have to do with one another. Now, this little five-verse story about these two sisters, Mary and Martha, is also quite famous beyond its length, certainly, and I think that's partly because there are not as many stories featuring women in the Bible as we would like. But often, that has been translated to mean that this is one of the few stories not only about women, but for women. So listen up, ladies. Story to you about two kinds of women, the good one and the bad one, and which one you should be. There's Martha, who is loud and talkative, and then there's Mary, who sits quietly, subserviently, at Jesus' feet. So, pretty much done with the sermon now, right? That is sometimes how this story has been told. It is the woman, in fact, without any voice. In fact, Mary has no lines, that is held up as a paragon of who women should be. But I think we miss the point when we think that this story of Mary and Martha is a story for women. It would be like saying the story of the Good Samaritan is only a story for men. I submit that both of these stories are for all of us, and that both of them, if we unpack them a little, may collide with some of our biases. They certainly collided with the biases of some of their first hearers, I'm sure. Now, poor Martha. I mean, I sympathize with her, and I don't think I've ever met a woman who doesn't. Here she is, she's welcomed Jesus into her house. She's fixing him a meal, offering hospitality. I mean, hospitality was a really big deal in that day, in that culture, still is, in many cultures. I mean, it's tradition, its roots. We often trace back to Abram, who welcomed these strangers hospitably and then was blessed because they were angels in disguise, and he was blessed with a son. Offering food to people like Martha was doing, why that's as much a part of Christianity as anything, right? That's kingdom work. I mean, it's in our mission statement. Or at least it's implied, right? Food, that's what we do. It's what we do well. We're known for food. And so what's Jesus' problem with Martha making food, we wonder? Many women, and frankly men too, have spent their life working in the kitchen or under the car or with the drywall. They've spent their life doing service only to be not given much public affirmation, to be forgotten to history and sometimes forgotten even in their present by those around them. And it is easy to wonder why Martha should be chided for such a desire to have Jesus noticed and to want someone else to help her. But I think it's really key to this story to remember that Jesus never went into the kitchen. Jesus didn't follow her over and say, "Martha, why are you in here? You should be over there doing what Mary's doing." No, Jesus seemed pretty content to let Martha do what she was drawn to and Mary do what she was drawn to. It is only when Martha calls him out as her guest and says, "Don't you care? Don't you care that I am doing this and my sister isn't even helping me? And that's not fair." You know, we all have a lot of biases about what fairness looks like. It's one of the things that our politicians argue about a lot. What is fair? That gets at our biases. And Martha thought that fairness meant that she and her sister should be doing the same thing. They should be showing devotion to their guest in the same way, using the same gifts. Martha's problem was not that she was cooking a meal. Martha's problem was that she wanted Mary to be like her. She didn't want Mary to be showing devotion to Jesus in the same way she was in a different way than what she was showing devotion to Jesus. But Jesus basically says, there are many ways of showing devotion, just one person to show devotion too. Many ways of showing love, just one source of love. In 1 Corinthians 13, we have this whole chapter about love, this very famous chapter, and in it we hear that if we are doing all of these good things using our gifts, but we are not doing them rooted in our source of love, then we're just a noisy gong. And Martha was a little bit of a noisy gong that day. And so rather than Jesus going to her and saying, "Great job, Martha," when she asked if he cared, he challenged her. He challenged her, but it wasn't her cooking, her preparation that he challenged. It was the biases that were distracting her from her service being rooted in love. Like the man, the legal expert who questioned Jesus, I think Martha too was trying to justify herself. And perhaps that's what draw these two stories together. But you know, we find Martha again. This isn't the last appearance of these sisters. And in particular, in the book of John, when their brother Lazarus dies, Martha appears again as a woman of great faith. And she identifies Jesus as the Messiah, one of the few people to give that title to him. And Mary is there too, weeping with Jesus. Somehow by this time, they seem to have accepted each other for who they are. Mary can be Mary, and Martha can be Martha. And it is to Martha that Jesus says these so often quoted words, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever dies will live again." In this season of Lent, we sort of ask ourselves that question. What within us needs to die? What within us do Jesus' words challenge or even collide with? You know, I've often wondered, what was Jesus talking to Mary about there when she was sitting at his feet? We sort of sometimes characterize it as something quiet and contemplative, but I don't know. Jesus was often challenging those in whom he saw great potential for growth. Jesus was often engaging, helping people grow, colliding with their biases. Perhaps he was with Mary's as well. Perhaps he was talking to her about prophetic words. There's no reason to believe that one sister was active and the other not active. They were simply active in different ways. Sitting at Jesus' feet is a very active thing, I would say. And perhaps Mary and Martha, perhaps the legal expert who came to Jesus, both, all of them, needed to have something die in order to make more room for devotion, more room for love, more focus on the source of love rather than all the distractions of the world. Perhaps Jesus was helping them all, as Jesus promises to help us, to let some of our biases die this Lent. Jesus challenged many biases, and these two stories for Luke suggest many that may have been challenged, the challenge of biases against enemies or foreigners, challenges against people who saw the religion different than we see the religion, people, challenges against the role of women or the role of this kind of service versus that kind of service, the bias that everyone should be like us, the bias that of what is fair, the bias that I should be able to get credit publicly for everything I do and say. That's what makes me want to justify myself. in front of others. And so Jesus challenges these things. But we also read elsewhere that if we want to bear fruit, if we want to bear the fruit of life, of love, we must let something die, like a grain of wheat that cannot grow into something fruitful until it has been buried. And so today we raise that question of what kind of biases we need to let go of. Perhaps some of us need to let go of biases against immigrants. And perhaps some of us need to let go of biases against the politicians who want to deport them. Perhaps some of us need to let go of biases against those who are not like us in our families, in our neighborhoods. You know, it's interesting because we tend to think that Jesus answered the question, who is our neighbor? But that's not really the question he answered. He told a story, and then at the end, he asked this legal expert, and who was the neighbor? In other words, he didn't answer the question, who is your neighbor, to the legal expert. Instead, he answered, what would it look like for you to be a neighbor? And the man, almost unable to say the word, the Samaritan, says, instead, the one who showed mercy. And I think it wasn't even the question of what it would look like for you to be a neighbor that Jesus was really answering. There was another question that preceded that, and that was the question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, show mercy. You will live. Mercy to your sister, mercy to your neighbor, mercy to your enemy, not in any particular ordered way, only by agreeing not to cross over on the other side